Hi, Nelson.
Hello. I'm Nelson Glory. It's June 4th, 2019, and I am interviewing my world history teacher, Anthony Salsicelli. Okay, so my question is, you were alive during the Cold War, right?
I was alive during the Cold War. The Cold War ended in the early 90s, so those were my childhood years.
Okay, what was it like?
You know, it wasn't as crazy as in the 50s with the duck and cover, but it was still a very palpable fear. And there's a lot of movies, like I remember one in particular called Red Dawn, which was Russians coming in and taking over a small town and the teenagers having to fight the Russians. So it was still palpable, but I was there when I saw it get dismantled and Gorbachev and Reagan. And, you know, it was scary in my early years, but as it ended during my high school years, it was a very hopeful, happy time in that respect.
Did the Cold War ever make you feel like it was the end of the world?
There was that fear, and again, a lot of it was perpetuated by the movies, War Games with Matthew Broderick, where, you know, it takes you right to the brink. You know, Red Dawn, as I mentioned, even even Rocky IV is Russia versus America. And, you know, even though we're out of the shadow of the mushroom cloud to a degree, you know, we still have the capabilities to destroy ourselves. We just have it in check with the UN Nuclear Security Council and a more friendly relationship with Russia.
How did it make you feel as a teenager during this time?
Well, as a teenager, when I was young, when I was 15, the Berlin Wall fell, and my teachers tried to get across to me the importance of that and the gravitas of that. I didn't really grasp it because just being young and not seeing the big picture. Now that I'm older, I see all the good things that were happening between the Berlin Wall falling and the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty and these new countries, and it permeated pop culture. There were songs. I mean, people talked about President Reagan's speech when he gave it, "Tear Down This Wall." So social studies and world events were really on the forefront of people's minds during that. And a very Cold War experience there.
What do you believe would have happened if any of the missiles were launched?
Well, I know what would have happened, you know. Again, my position as a history teacher, you know, I teach others. I hope I taught you about mutual assured destruction, and that if it were to come to nuclear conflict, I think it's a safe bet that it's going to be the end of times or pretty gosh darn near it, or we're starting from scratch. You know, it'd be more catastrophic than the Library of Alexandria burning down or some of these, you know, turning point moments in our history where we really had to start from scratch. It would be a disaster on a scale that humankind has never seen.
Do you believe that there was a time that the Soviet Union was more powerful than us?
They were on par, and we were in the arms race and in the space race. We were going toe-to-toe. And essentially, I would say America pretty much just outspent the Russians in the big picture. So Russia was an equal. I mean, they were the two superpowers of the time. And it's not the global world you were born into, but it was really a world of two superpowers. And that was even the names given to them. Almost sounds like a comic book. You know, they have superpowers. Yeah. And I just shut the window because the lawnmower was an opportune time, wasn't it? That was great. Thank you, lawnmower guy. All right.
What advantages did Russia have over us?
They had a wealth of scientists that were really exceptional, and they had that drive. You know, in a communist regime, you were forced into it. I mean, you had no choice. But again, I think, like my earlier point, I think we really were on par with them. It was very tit for tat. They had fantastic scientists. We had fantastic scientists. We had a drive. They had a drive. And, you know, normally something like that, like in athletics, if you have this rival that pushes you, you know. Right now it's Toronto versus Golden State. You know, it's going to be a great performance because these are the two top teams to get the best out of us. It's almost we got the worst out of us, that we had a rival that was very comparable to us, very equal to us, and it pushed us to spend and it pushed us to create weapons of destruction that we'll never get out of that hole. Never. Not a million years, economically speaking.
Do you believe that maybe there could have been actions that could be taken that could have like prevented like the Cold War from happening?
Yeah, you know, if you look at the Yalta Conference, that ended very unsatisfactory to Stalin. Stalin was not happy at the end of the Yalta Conference. You know, bearing in mind we were allies during World War II, and in 45, to go from being an ally for, and there's footage of Russian soldiers and American soldiers hugging each other and singing and exchanging chocolates and cigarettes and as brothers, putting hats on each other's heads, to a couple of years later hating each other. Perhaps if Yalta and Potsdam went better, perhaps if Russia got a more equitable peace, according in their eyes, peace of Germany, it maybe could have been averted. I think it's a lot more subtle than, say, what I taught you in class about World War II being caused by the mishap of the Treaty of Versailles. I think that's more explicit. So there was a possibility. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way.
Yeah. Do you believe that both sides were wrong? And if so, can you like list ways like both sides are wrong?
It's hard to say. I mean, you have to walk in the shoes of the people who were there. And it's almost, you know, history, when we get to a point in time, it's the result of, it's the sum parts of many, many decisions. So was the Manhattan Project correct to get the A-bomb before the Nazis? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think Roosevelt was 100% correct in doing so. Now, once we got the A-bombs, were we wise in dropping it on Japan? Well, in Truman's eyes, according to what all of his military people said, we were saving lives in the big picture, so we were probably correct, but by doing that, we opened up Pandora's box that, and we've been in the mushroom cloud since July of 45, and we're always gonna be in that shadow of the mushroom cloud. So that's a good question, but it's just, it's kind of a unfortunate series of mishaps that got us to that real dark Cold War period. But you know, there were some good things. You know, we didn't fight in a nuclear fashion. We did fight proxy wars in lieu of that, so it certainly could have been worse. We wouldn't be having this conversation otherwise. We wouldn't be born.
Do you have any family members living in a communist society?
Heck no. No, heck no. In fact, I think the draw, you know, to America is being in a democratic capitalist regime. And we're not the only one, but you look at the world of 2019, the majority of the world is living in a democratic capitalist regime because it's a better way to live. I think it's a safe bet to say communism has been a failure time and time again. That's why we see very little of it in 2019. And I would venture to say, by the time you're my age, I think China is going to matriculate away from communism into more of a democratic capitalist regime. I think Cuba will. I think Venezuela is going to, you know, just pretty much shoot itself in the foot by trying to adopt these policies. The only regime I can see staying put is North Korea, just because of how ingrained it is and how it's almost a cycle with this family. But it's dying, if not dead, or it's certainly close to be going away. And thank goodness, good riddance to bad rubbish. Good riddance to bad rubbish.
Do you think that maybe another Cold War could happen, possibly?
Yeah, you know, if you look at Putin right now, Putin is getting really heavy-handed. China. There, I got right the third. In China, with the tariffs going on now, and we are incurring the ire of China, it could go back into that sort of vibe. And you know, with President Trump being our president, and I think he's a very impulsive person, whereas China and Russia see the long term and are scheming. You take their long term schemes with Trump's impulsiveness, things could result into having another Cold War. Most certainly, I think so.
Mm-hmm. How did the Cold War affect your life?
It was the fear as a child, and you know, I think my high school years, it was a good time to be alive, to come of age, to see the world change, to see the sense of possibility. And when the Berlin Wall fell, there was a real sense of joy internationally. And you had the sense that the good guys won. And again, as a child, it's more of a black-white existence. But what I was raised to be good, you know, democracy and capitalism, we saw that grow, and we saw people who weren't free becoming free. And, you know, you'd wish that upon anybody. And it went from, because again, I was born in 74, and the Berlin Wall fell in 89, so I was 15. So my first 15 years, it was awfully scary, but then it morphed into this sense of possibility and hope and positivity. And, you know, it ushered in the 90s, which was a fantastic time to be alive. You know, the 90s were great. And my college years and my young guy years, you know, Michigan State and playing rugby and being single and road trips. Economy was good. It was, the energy was good. And then 9/11, you can make a pretty clear demarcation where kind of things turned a little darker, a little less positive.
Well, were you as an individual restricted in some ways because of the Cold War?
No. Again, we didn't travel. We didn't have that kind of situation to travel abroad, so it did not affect me in that respect. It was it wasn't me a personal restriction as much as it was a national challenge to get through the Cold War, that brinkmanship. And I think President Reagan did a good job presenting us as strong, presenting us as don't mess with us, but at the same time not being so heavy-handed that we crossed that line into actual war. So Gorbachev and Reagan balanced things about as well as they could, and I have a lot of respect for them both as leaders, for the way they handled it. Even in my classroom, I have a big poster of President Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev shaking hands, and I keep it up there, and kind of as a reminder of the change that took place.
Well, so going back to the belief where, like, the whole domino theory where if one country becomes communist, the other will. Were there some countries in, like, some, like far-off location that you believe, like, could have been communist? Like, let's say some oceanic countries?
You know, the oceanic countries weren't a point of emphasis. They're, you know, Oceania is a third of the world's geography and 1% of the population. I think Latin America, that was the real contentious area where it could go either way. So Latin America was a target, and Latin America is a little too close for comfort. You know, Southeast Asia, you know, the domino theory was proved to be a failure, but it wasn't completely irrational at the time. So sometimes you look at history and say, oh my gosh, what a bonehead decision. And you should have seen it to be a bonehead decision. I don't think the domino theory was a bonehead decision, nor was the containment theory boneheaded. It just simply didn't hold true, but there was certainly a rationale there. In a sense, you know, the expression I always use, it all comes out in the wash. In time, you let people live, and you let people live under communism, and it will fail. It's inherently rigged to fail. It will collapse, and people will eventually come to democracy. But again, you know, hindsight's 20/20. We can sit back in 2019 and say, well, look what happened. People don't know at the time. They do the best they can with the evidence and the information they're given, and they make their decisions based on that. So, you know, that's the cool part of history. You know, the stuff you learn in grade 10, the nuts and bolts and the basics, it's important to know that story, but it's that deeper history where you can, you know, ask questions like that. Well, what could have happened? Was it a good decision? You know, that sort of thing. And you can debate that all day long. Don't know if there's a hard set answer.
Okay, so I just wonder, like, in, like, the world nowadays, like, when we look at communist countries that still remain, like North Korea, do you see it as a possibility that they could start, like, trying to, like, take over neighboring countries and make them communist?
Yeah, most definitely, and that's why it's important to keep an eye on them. You have to keep them in check. The UN Security Council, if North Korea and Iran, they start playing the fool, it's imperative that we squash it before it festers and grows. And again, I'm not a hawk per se. I'm not wishing for war. I'm not hoping for war. But we have this tremendous military. to prevent regimes like Iran and North Korea from crossing that line. And I think if you look at history, you know, in class I taught you about Neville Chamberlain and his desire to use diplomacy with the Nazis instead of just squashing it early on. And because Chamberlain wasn't hawkish enough, he was too dove-like, the Nazi atrocities were much more amplified because they grew and they took over. And it probably could have been squashed in 36 if there was a consensus with countries to stop it early, but we didn't. So, you know, you hopefully use history as a guide to make your decisions in the future. And I don't think that's a false equivocation. I do think the way we treat Iran and the way we treat North Korea, these are dangerous regimes. These are irrational regimes, as was the Nazi regime. So I think it's a similar dynamic.
Well, thank you for your time.
No, thank you for your time, Nelson. So, Nelson, any parting words you want to say as you're about to be done with 10th grade?
Well, I mean, I've had a lot this year. You know, I've seen things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I've learned a lot in world history. Also philosophy being a slight part of it. Like, it's helped me see, like, things in a different way than I used to see it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it helped me, like, be, like, more open-minded.
Good.
Yeah, and just...
I appreciate you saying that. In fact, I think philosophy is a big part of it. One of my academic heroes, a man named Will Durant, was asked, are you a historian or are you a philosopher? And he said, you're both. You can't be one without the other, because going back to an earlier question you asked me, the decisions that are made in history are often, if not all the time, predicated on some philosophical notion. And you touched upon containment, you touched upon domino theory. But, you know, there's premises and there's conclusions, which is essentially a philosophy. And communism is a philosophy. Capitalism is an economic philosophy. So I don't feel you can separate philosophy from history. They are like peanut butter and jelly, you know? I guess you could have just jelly or just peanut butter. But, you know, it goes together. You know what I'm saying? So, all right. So, all right, Nelson. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so you hit done. Okay, you finished recording, yes.